Okay, right.
All right, yeah, we'll call the meeting to order. And if everyone took a look at the minutes from last month, any questions, anything? All right.
I'll make a motion that we approve the minutes as submitted.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, we will move right into resolutions.
Do we want to... Do you want to let Senator Hepner's...
Sure, oh yeah, if you... You don't have to stick around unless you want to. We'll just move that.
Thank you, Chairman Lopez. It's good to be back with you guys at the committee. So before you guys, it's a local law that I proposed. After reading about what they had done to Erie County.
We'll move to discuss it.
In Erie County, that essentially is very straightforward, would ban the practice of conversion therapy for minors here in Ulster County. Erie County passed the legislation, which is, this version is essentially identical to the way they went about it. They became the first county outside of New York City to take this step. So if we were to move forward here in Ulster County, we'd be the second county outside of New York State, as well as joining 9 other states who have done this statewide. As it says in the legislative intent, this is a very concerning practice that has been criticized by every leading medical group from, the pediatrics and so forth. The list is in the intent. So it's very straightforward. I'm happy to discuss with you guys further if you have any questions. Feel free to...
Is this an issue that was raised in Ulster County? Have we had...
No, because, I mean, there has been just a natural, in public, this practice is not as openly advertised. We don't have, local psychiatrists, putting it on the billboards, or in the ads, advertising. It's not. But I think the county executive in Erie County made a really good point when they passed their version unanimously, in that, you have laws to, as also as deterrents, to prevent this practice. Unfortunately, this is a practice that happens a lot in the shadows. It doesn't happen, in a very public clinical situation. So I think it's important, and I think going, kind of along the trend of what this legislature has done in the last few years, we've really taken steps to protect our youth, whether it's ban of smoking or what we did last year along the lines of cyberbullying. This is just another step that since New York State has been unable to take action like 9 other states, that we here in Ulster County can establish that this practice that has been proven medically and scientifically to be very harmful to children, especially LGBTQ children, it's not welcomed and it won't be allowed here in Ulster County.
Mm-hmm. So I would agree with that description, and what tends to happen with these kinds of programs is that they come to light when there's a major problem, when you have a child who is harmed in some major way, and then you find out that, yes, it is happening in your community. The law as it's written here walks a fine line to include what it calls formal treatment, but not try to interfere with religious communities in terms of their presenting their own understanding of the nature of what they consider a condition. And that's, I think we have to do that to respect that realm. But I did want to clarify, and I get your, or at least get your sense, that formal treatment would cover a counselor in a religious setting who fits the definition of trying to encourage sexual orientation or gender identity change efforts. That it's the action rather than whether or not they're a licensed professional. If it's presenting their own religion's view, then that's just education about their religion. But if they undertake to provide a treatment, then they would be, and they would fall under this law.
Yes, that's the my interpretation.
I think that's important that it do that.
In any of the other state laws, do you also refer to maybe pulling their license? Because I see there's a fine here. Again, if it gets out of control, if it continues to do something like this and fining's not working.
That's a really good point. The penalties here mirror the penalties that they did in Erie County, and that is my belief, and I'll follow up with Council Ducci just to 100% confirm. But my understanding is that, as you know, lawmakers in Australia, you are limited in the level of penalties we can I don't believe, because also saying there's an oversee the licensing, we have the authority.
And some of these people may not be licensed.
Yeah.
So could we could we include that the proper authority, like whoever their licensing board is notified if they have a violation?
That's a good point. I mean, more than happy to make
Now, who's enforced? We're going to work with the sheriff on this, or who's going to enforce this when somebody reports it, who they report it to, and then who gets contacted?
It would be law enforcement, and then go through the classic legal proceedings, whether, you know, the county chose to...
And then it's going to be the DA
that's
and they're down with it all?
I haven't heard facts. I haven't heard anything from them being against it. I mean, the lawmaking bodies, I'd be happy to have a discussion with them. I've spoken with the executive about this. I've spoken with Jeff Ridler at the Hudson Valley LGBTQ Center. They were very, you know, excited about, you know, the possibility. They have a copy of the version. They've been excited. The executive was supportive of my discussion with them. But if the DA was to have any concerns, I'd be happy to have that conversation.
Well, I think they should be involved. They're the ones. This is, we put it up. We pass it, it's a statement, but then it's nothing unless the sheriff does their part and the DA does their part, so to not have them involved in it, I think is, you know, something that they should be involved with from the beginning. And then, though, but we don't know of anything, even in all of New York State, that where they're doing this. I know, I've heard stories out west, but I've never heard anything in New York.
It's accepted in New York State. I can try and provide you with some specific details, but it is, the practice is legal in New York State too, so you're not going to get...
Yeah, now what about a clergyman being recorded saying something to a group with minors in that group, in that church, promoting marriages between a man and a woman, and I mean, how do we handle that?
I think
slippery slope of we're going to charge that person. It has to be in a therapeutic setting.
So that goes under what? Yeah, I think legislator Nolan, you know, is going to say better than how she just put it forward. Under the interpretation of section 2 and formal treatment.
It's 2D, the last sentence.
And if they go further, that could be brought up, and that's something they'll have to deal with it somewhat. They, I don't think that's a big problem in Ulster County, but I'd like to see.
Do you think that these changes will make a problem for you, Jonathan, if we go ahead and move it to...
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'm more things that we have a good suggestion that the war had about, you know, just the note, having it on the record and notifying, mm-hmm. you know, just adds further strength to the law. So I'd be happy to make that amendment mm-hmm. and have Councilor Gucci draft that up.
And it has to go through laws and rules?
Yeah,
so it'll go through laws and rules in that form?
I'll see about getting it before that.
Because we can pass it with an amendment, right?
Yeah,
we can pass that with an amendment. Clear and very...
No?
Yeah.
So,
do we need a separate amendment to go to a vote, or do you just call the question?
No, why are you going to amend it now? I'm fine with
We may as well amend it before we do anything, because otherwise you have to start over.
Your motion.
But we don't have the language of the amendment. any applicable and any applicable licensing board will be notified.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here, Captain,
put it on one of the
Is that great?
Yes, that's okay. I'm going to use that as a record. Kathy, where are you amending it?
Under Section 4 penalties, we'll make a comment at the end of that sentence. So we would be proposing to add after a comma, and any applicable licensing board will be notified. Is that sufficient?
And that is Section 4.
4 penalties.
So is that the amendment you're proposing?
That's the amendment I'm proposing. Is there a second? Yes,
somebody moved that? I
moved it. And Mary seconded.
And discussion on the amendment?
You guys like notifying the licensing board?
Yeah. How do you know notifying the public that it's out? Are we personally, are we going to send it off if this passes all together? Are we going to send this off to all therapists and all the churches? I mean, how do you make people know that this is out there? And they're not seeing the Freeman that day. I know a lot of the stuff we talked about with the H21, there's a plan that has to contact everybody. There's also been written in and planned the law enforcement side of it as well.
But I think this could be something that the public health department could do without having it have to be that widespread, because it will get coverage, and I think a lot of these groups will notify. Mm-hmm. So I think that should be sufficient. That way we keep our costs down.
If we're going to send off a letter to the licensing board saying, hey, this person's doing something against mm-hmm. the law, risking mm-hmm. their medical license mm-hmm. for something they may not even know about.
Oh, they know.
Well, can you notify the licensing board to how do they put out? Do they have
all of the medical professional organizations that are listed in the law have statements on this issue? The American Academy of Pediatrics had a statement on this issue decades ago. Mm-hmm. So the medical communities, I think, are up to speed on it. But I think it is a fair.
But do they notify you when something's?
They wouldn't necessarily notify us about this law going into effect. So it's a fair point.
If this did happen.
But that would have been an easy way to deal with it.
They're going
to
get fined $5,000 and they might lose their license. Mm-hmm. And they're saying, yeah. I didn't even know this got bad.
And the public...
After violating a law.
The public health department probably can...
You have a ticket for parking on the side of the road. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm sorry.
I think there are a lot of laws about signs and markings. Mm-hmm. You're not allowed to get tickets for certain things.
Would you not
have that on this one?
Yeah. All right. We just, the question would be, if we pass a law that would have a requirement that conviction under the law would require the public health the licensing board to be notified. It, what mechanism should we put in place, if any, to notify those communities of practitioners that we passed this law? State responsibility.
Normally that notice would come from the prosecuting side, where the DA, county attorney, etc.
I'm you know, willing to, you know, work, and I'll talk to Vicki too and pass examples of some more of what steps they've taken to make sure if, you know, the law like this is passed, what steps do we have available, resources do we have available to us to make sure the proper channels are notified.
That sounds good enough to you, Joe?
It will work, yeah, I mean,
work to notify people but not build in a structure inside the law itself?
Yeah, look, I just don't like the idea of passing anything that sounds great, that we all agree on, that doesn't necessarily have any teeth. It's another thing that collects dust, that because it never was really put into play the same way something at the state level would be done. And then what we have is a nice little statement. Anybody read about it when it got passed? It was effective for that. But beyond that, the DA and the sheriff aren't looking for it. So people don't know about it. I just think we're going to do it right.
Well, this would also be more of a complaint-based law. And, you know, because otherwise there's no way you would know about it.
Well, if certain sexual orientations are classified as disorders, doesn't the definition of that have to change if to keep people from practicing or treating it as such, rather than penalizing for doing essentially what that definition describes it as? You know what I'm saying?
I think the last time that sexual orientation. I didn't look this up before coming here tonight, but I believe the last time that sexual orientation was listed as a disorder in the Diagnostic and Statistic Manuals was probably back in Diagnostic and Statistical Manual 9, and I think we're up into the teens. I'm not practicing, so I didn't check recently. So, yes, I think you're right. If this were still considered a disorder and someone was trained to treat it, then the law would be inappropriate.
Right.
I don't believe that's any longer the case, that any diagnostic or statistic manual that is used for these purposes includes this as a disorder.
Okay.
Some of the people in the room may know better about that than I do. If that turns out not to be the case, then I think we...
That was what I'm saying, in the current modern medical community.
It seems like it's been a while, I would say.
This thing last handed was just for a long time.
If I remember correctly, transgenderism was described as a body dysmorphic or something along those lines. And forgive me from where I get my resources, but I watch the I Am Jazz, and she was actually getting treatment, or she was having this discussion with a psychologist who actually still describes it as such. So,
I see. So you can treat with an appropriate treatment. But so maybe the distinction here is not that it's not a disorder, but that this is conversion therapy is not recognized as a legitimate treatment. We don't use leeching to treat people who have fever anymore. But fever is still a medical condition that gets treatment. So I did not check the diagnostic and statistical manuals about this. I can, and it would be an easy question to answer.
Obviously double back on this, my interpretation of that one, and also what you said in terms of actually talking about the course of a specific treatment. You know, treatment in general.
Right. If somebody has, and I think that is provided in here, that it does not include, it was in that same section D, does not include, this law does not address psychotherapies that provide acceptance, support, and an understanding of the client. And I don't know, I don't think because we're talking about a talk type of therapy here and not a medical procedure, that we have to include language here about medical procedures that might that'd be a separate issue.
Yeah. No, I understand. Yeah, that just my issue would only be that if it's still described as a disorder, well, how can you penalize somebody who's basically doing what the technical definition is?
With the patient's request.
Right. So, I think that's kind of a little bit of an issue. Although I do realize the intent behind it. But I don't know, for me that would need to at least be addressed because you don't want to penalize people for something that they don't even know that they're potentially going about the wrong way because it's part of how it's defined.
Yeah. Well, I'm not 99% sure that what Mr. Nolan's point was is that it's not considered, not defined any longer.
Sure.
But I will certainly double back just to be 100%.
Sure. Now this has to go through laws and rules
as well. Monday before the session. So there's some time.
Okay.
Yeah, I take the intent of the law and reading it again to make sure that we're careful with the language here. To avoid calling something a therapy that attempts to change a person's expressed sexual orientation or gender identity.
Sure.
And it does say that it addresses sexual orientation from homosexual to heterosexual, heterosexual to homosexual. So the attempt here is to create a realm in which there's not a predefined end identity that gets imposed on any individual. And that is certainly where I understand medical, pediatric, psychiatric practice to be in today's world. So I think we're in good shape with this, but I think it's a very reasonable point.
Definitely. Yeah, my biggest thing is, I like to be able to know that if we're moving forward with something that's legal. Mm-hmm. So, and I guess if you said that to Christopher,
yeah, it's wrong too, yeah.
And
obviously,
yeah, I would like to run it by Nick as well, and Kyle, and see if they have any input. But if that's something that we can,
maybe looked up the diagnostic statistics manual.
Not until 1987 did homosexuality completely fall out of the DSM.
Is there any other discussion? Did we vote on the amendment?
We proposed the amendment and we voted it.
And discussion on the amendment? I think we had that.
Okay.
On the amendment, all in favor?
Aye.
And is there any further discussion on the resolution? And on the resolution as amended, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Yep, please. All right, we will move on to resolution. Setting up a public hearing on proposed local law, number 9, adopting a countywide notification requirement on the trapping of free roaming stray and work barrel cats. Move for discussion.
We have members of the public. We have Gina Carbonari, who is the executive director for the Osceola SPCA. She did submit the changes are to your left bit. They're not changes. Some of them are cleaning up the verbiage to make it consistent. It says free roaming, feral, and stray cats. So that was carried out throughout the document. There was a merging of the notification So the whole section of neighborhood notification is crossed out and it's added in to the town clerk notification. So it looks like a lot, but it's not. I'll send a copy. I've had that down to the
I gave my copy.
Is it all right if executive director sits up at the table with us to go over some of the...
Let's start by discussion.
Okay. As far as substantial changes, like microchip or ear chip, shall mean.
Yeah, but hold up, Mark. If you start questioning when we're reading something different, it's going to be more than. Because I think you're right. I think a lot of these are just. Yeah, I think you're right.
Can I notify the president?
No, that's the registry.
Okay.
So it was actually two separate sections where the rest of the group were individual TNR volunteer.
Okay.
Notified the town, village, or city clerk, and then notified the neighborhood.
Okay.
Just to clean it up so it wasn't so, and it was the same.
Right.
Because Gina did note a couple of omissions that I had made, and she said she just put it onto the front end. Which is, you know, addresses several concerns about release of animals back into the wild. If you're putting them back to their origin, then it's not considered an abandonment.
If you look at 3C, it's the language I think we should use at all these places throughout, shall be immediately released at the location at which they were captured. I think that's accurate, and that's what it should be. Could we maybe go through from the beginning?
Sure,
because if we're going to accept them, we would have to write in the language we're going to be accepting. And I think there's only a few that are big, but there are a couple that we should talk about.
So in the title, it's just changed the order.
Mm-hmm.
And in the third paragraph, I think all those changes are fine. The one that, there's two that seem substantive. One is change trap neuter and release to trap neuter return.
Mm-hmm.
That's the preferred
mm-hmm.
language,
yeah.
I take it.
Yeah.
So I think we should do that throughout. And then in the last sentence there, efforts must be made to reunite. It's either going to be the pets or the cats. Both are in there right now. The pets, do you have a preference? This is
the cats.
This is only addressing cats, so the cats with their owners. So just the cats, I think, makes it covers everybody. And then in the next one, for the purpose of reuniting trapped companion animals or pets with their owners.
Change that to cats as well.
And then change that to cats.
Okay.
Let's continue to discuss for a moment, and then we'll give you an opportunity.
If we go off the rails. And then we're going back to TNR volunteers, organizations, operations, and or private citizens. That all seems clarifying. Definitions, we're going to change cat rescuer to TNR volunteer throughout. The definitions, is that good for everybody?
Yeah.
In order to sterilize, vaccinate, ear to. Yeah. So it would read, TNR volunteer shall mean any person who individually or on behalf of a TNR organization or operation sets traps with the intention of trapping feral and or stray cats in order to sterilize, vaccinate, ear to, and place for adoption and return the cats to their colony of origin.
Mm-hmm.
That all seems good.
Yeah.
Because it might be an owner. Their owner or colony of origin. Because we're going to read their microchips and find out if they had an owner.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just being a volunteer for traveling organization.
Okay. In our organization. Okay, so we're going to need to just keep enough focus so that we can be sure we're all talking about the same paragraph. B is TNR organization. So anyone that engages individuals as TNR volunteers. That seems to relate back to this. First page, and it's good. TNR operation. Trapping feral or stray cats. Yeah, that's would be number C. Either by that cat's owners or anyone authorized to do so on their behalf. Accepting efforts. Okay. Are we done all together?
Yeah.
Getting into some substantive stuff?
If I just go back to section 2 for a second. This is the return to catch the colony of origin. What is the colony of origin?
So that's where we said we should insert that language. No, it could say, like on C, on 3, where it says, instead of calling our origin, should be released at the location at which they were captured.
Okay,
instead of colony of origin, I think would be better.
Mm-hmm.
Does
that would make sense? Does that would be consistent?
Mm-hmm. So that was 2A, was it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
You got that, Patty? So return the cats to their owner or...
Sterilize, vaccinate, ear tip, and place for adoption, or return their cats to their owner
mm-hmm.
or to the location where they were captured.
Okay.
So that will be a known place.
Okay,
so B and C, we talked about D is a new D on the red line copy.
To define private citizens was referred to in
mm-hmm.
I think one of the other definitions. Yes, it was referred to in the section one.
On their own property? Would we consider them a private citizen even if they were on somebody else's property? It's the new
red D. It would be a CNR volunteer. If they're on somebody else's property.
Only if they've connected with a TNR group, right?
Mm-hmm. What if it was not necessarily. Not all TNR people are connected with a group.
Isn't the homeowner catching feral cats on their own property?
On their own property, yeah.
Yeah, it's a private citizen.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we consider them a TNR volunteer.
Right.
Self-designated.
Right, yeah. Well, or, you know, or working with a village or city, but not necessarily affiliated with a rescue group, but most of them go through the SPCA. So, because you could get, you know, they should be held under the same law. A private citizen could trap on their own private property, and who knows what they'll do with the animal. So they should be held
D is to distinguish from A.
Correct.
Which is a person who is doing this with the intent to sterilize, vaccinate, ear tip, or to place for adoption or
mm-hmm.
return to the owner.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Should we hear from anybody here? I mean, some of the people that are actually going to be involved in enforcement.
We're
brainstorming. Maybe they have something.
Yeah, if there's a specific question that somebody has for somebody who may be able to answer or clarify, then I think it should be question based and not just necessarily a Q&A back and forth. So if there's something someone can ask or somebody that can weigh in on a specific question, then I don't have a problem.
Anything we've talked about, you think we're just not getting quite right, tell us.
He was
going to
answer her question.
Oh, okay.
You want committee to ask us questions. Is there a specific question that's
right now I feel like we have Gina's recommendations in front of us, mm-hmm. and I like to get them onto one sheet of paper with the sheet of paper we already had some other changes on so that we have one document, and then ask questions so that we know what we're talking about. Because right now if you want answer something about D, it's different on one sheet than it is on the other. And we don't usually do this in committee, so we're trying to figure out a way to do it.
That's why a lot of these last-minute changes, kind of takes everybody off guard, because I generally like to look at this stuff prior to that way. We can all come up with our questions, and then instead of having, a big Q&A with everybody that's here this evening, then we could just ask specific questions and ask for that and get clarification. So, this is supposed to make the process, I guess, not really great, but at the same time, I think a more efficient way in order to go about this was for everybody to have an opportunity to look and ask their own questions and then share those with people who may be able to give us, the best answers. So,
We're not locking anything in right now. We're just making the two pieces of paper match each other. The ear tipping shall mean the practice of surgically removing the tip of the cat's left ear while the cat is under anesthesia to, I would suggest we say, readily identify the cat as sterilized. Because the vet will know that already. Microchip shall mean a small identifying computer chip with owner information, including phone number and address, which is inserted under the skin of the pet to delete, to track. Okay, section 3, notification requirements, just changes the order of bag, barrel, and stray.
Mm-hmm.
A, notification includes neighborhood community residents.
That's where Section 3A and B were combined, and Section B has been completely removed. So to make it consistent about notification, let's see what they did. Just totally took out everything.
So, so instead of listing it all twice, we're now listing it once?
Yes.
Okay, then we don't need it. A,
I guess. We just have...
notification. And neighborhood community residents. And under number 2, we add in all the residents, which is what was addressed in Section B previously.
Okay.
We're calling it trapping rather than rescue after
removal. Right, should be permanent removal.
Okay.
Whereas trapping would be medical and then determination of whether they're adoptable or they're replaced back in their colony of origin or whatever the word is for permanent.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third that was pulled out of
B.
Right.
Which can be, and then 3 becomes 4. And includes a multi-day trapping operation. Again, puts in trapping instead of rescue.
Mm-hmm.
Has TNR volunteers instead of individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And where does that, this language of all the radio frequency, is that already from someplace else, or that's new language? Look up good language, but it seems like I recognize it.
Take credit for that.
if it is a TNR organization, they should have phone number, email, physical and website address, and proof of access. That was in there, but now it's where it is there.
Okay.
And 4 and 5 were just included in number 3.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, there it is. That's where it was from. So, just, it's 4, 5, and 6 all are just same language moved up to number 3. And then a separate approach for private citizens, which is much simpler, just phone number, email, and mailing address.
Mm-hmm.
And then information about how the traps are going to be handled. Okay. And that would bring me to C, which would now be B. And so A goes back in. I didn't notice that it was a C. We have an A and a B, and a B, which is now no cats with tipped ears shall be removed, but instead shall be immediately released at the location at which they were captured. Remove might not be the right verb there.
Retained
is what I think that means. That's what I was going to suggest.
Okay.
But I wasn't sure it was how you described what the vets do.
Retained is good.
Okay. Mandatory hold period is good. and period is better than period.
I put the N in mandatory, but before it was mandatory.
Oh, it's, yes, you're right. That should be in red.
Mandatory, yeah. Gender neutral.
Okay. A, it should said previously, no period of less than 7 days. That's now changed. Each track cat should be scanned for the microchip.
Right, that follows that new law, which is in the first section under section one.
Mm-hmm. So that's,
so that's a clarification. So that's completely in.
So cats that don't have a microchip will be placed on a 7-day stray hold, while every attempt shall be made to locate the owners.
And that's an existing law.
That's an existing law. It was signed in December by the governor's office. Yeah.
The following microchip scanning and assessment of adoptability should be made for each stray cat that does not have a microchip. then you wouldn't be able to scan. I think you just want to strike that, the first three words there, and say an assessment of adoptability shall be made for each cat that does not have a microchip.
This is clarification. If the cat's too feral to be adopted, that it's not held for 7 days, that it's sterilized,
yes,
and released to a colony of origin.
But
are you not doing the colony of origin?
Not the colony of origin. To
location
at which they were captured.
I just have a question. Now, who holds them? Where are they? Like, is the vet doing?
No. They're held by the CNR organization.
Okay.
So that holding would apply to any of the private citizens in the CNR organization or CNR operation or volunteer. Right.
Oh, so this could say return to a site no more than 50 feet from the actual capture site.
Right. Exactly.
Now, I just have a question. Sometimes there's issues with cats staying in a neighborhood that don't have owners or whatever. Is there any recourse for a property owner?
We'd like to address that in a different law.
Okay.
But
that can be
especially
if we're releasing them right back where they were, which I totally get.
Right.
But
at least now they're sterilized. I mean, if they're...
Right.
As the law develops, and now we're getting off course, but, you know, it should be that if you've had cats outside, they have to be stayed under there.
Right.
But they're the ones causing the issue where you get large groups of people in who want them all gone or killed or whatever.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. As hard as they are,
right,
the shorter it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Section 4C deals with cats that are assessed as adoptable and allowing them to be adopted. And that also applies to those microchip cats whose stray hold period has expired. Yes, this includes microchip cats who are beyond the 7 days, basically. D, if an adoptable cat is not reclaimed by an owner and a suitable home or shelter is unavailable, the cat may be returned to the site of capture instead of colony of origin. Or maybe you just return to a site no more than 50 feet from the actual capture site. That's how we decided to do that. Are you good?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Section 5, records. Is PNR volunteer instead of rescuer. PNR operations instead of rescue operations. A4, if the cat were returned to the lawful owner, including the owner's name, phone number, signature and date of return. So just, yeah, include phone number there, and you might want to make it subjunctive.
I just have a question. So the TNR people are keeping the records?
Yeah.
And so what is the clerk? Is
the clerk
keeping the photograph?
The clerk is just, that's the TNR.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, all the clerk's responsibility is to have a registration or a form or contact information on hand. So if you call up and say,
kind of like
a
dog license.
Kind of similar, you know,
yeah,
we have the licensing. But,
right,
you know, in,
right,
the SPCA would refer you to, you know, I live in a SOPIS. Okay, so call your town clerk, see if anybody out there is doing a rescue or an operation, TNR operation. I would call them and find out who had listed or who had registered. And then I could call them up and say, hey, Mr. Cat. So, instead of calling 54 organizations like I do when mine turns up missing,
mm-hmm,
you know,
and they don't. So, if we, section five, number six,
mm-hmm,
I think this is not good the way it's been amended in red.
Okay.
So I think it maybe was better in the black.
Okay.
Then it would say, if the cat was released, include the exact location released within 50 feet.
Okay.
That's better because... Yeah, we're trying to
okay.
Yeah. And then in number seven, if the cat was euthanized, include the date, location, and name of the licensed veterinarian conducting the euthanasia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's...
Yeah.
Maybe you have the same ones. We don't talk about any reasons in here for, I assume, if the cat is rabid, it's going to be...
Oh, right. But then you have a medical doctor making a medical determination.
But should we do that in there, saying, you know what I mean? Like, in the state.
Yeah, that was my question. Okay, so we only have a couple more.
Is there a standard that has to be reached before they can euthanize?
No.
That was the only thing in the whole thing that I saw that I was wondering about. That bothered me.
So it says,
if the cat was euthanized, include the date, location, and name of the licensed veterinarian conducting the euthanasia, but nothing about that anywhere else, about what the standard is, and if you're going to hold them responsible for euthanizing, which is a big part of this, then how do you hold them accountable if there's no standard for euthanasia?
The veterinarians have their own internal, they would be...
But maybe we should include that to say meeting and requirement.
Well, when you start getting into that, then who makes the decisions if the cat's got, you know, chlamydia in the eyes or an upper respiratory?
Well, that's not just
a
name
or anything.
Right.
How do you stop people from getting around the law?
I mean, honestly, that question I would like to defer to a professional.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Hope this is a good... revision to have a professional veterinarian be the only person, licensed veterinarian be the only one who could conduct the euthanasia. And it seemed to prevent a lot of the harms we're trying to prevent. Are you trying to make it stronger than that by saying that even the licensed veterinarian cannot conduct?
Well, first of all, it doesn't say only
Oh, that's what I'm saying.
We understand that. I'm trying to address whether legislator Maloney has an additional question.
But if your guys' point is that the licensed veterinarian is not going to euthanize unless, then maybe even say can only be euthanized. Is it anywhere in here that only a veterinarian can euthanize?
Yes, right there.
Well,
it assumes. If the cat was euthanized, include the date, location, name of the licensed veterinarian.
Mm-hmm.
So
and so on. Oh, it lives in the other law that
specifically.
Yeah, it lives in the black version that it could only be so we need to find that and make sure we didn't lose it.
The one responsible for the terminal diagnosis, you're saying it has to be done, I guess. But it's still kind of assumed more than stated.
Yeah, I think it should be somewhere other than records. Maybe we could put it, you know, in addition to records.
This is a notification law.
How about in a mandatory hold period?
If I can try to answer, I think that's the question that you're really asking. Yeah. What is the requirement that needs to be met in order to use
that? Yes.
And there is no requirement. it can be a feral cat, and because it's a feral cat, it can be a cat. There is no state law that you now, what you're talking about is getting into no kill and a different philosophy. And if you start doing some legislation that starts saying that this is a no-kill county, which, again, I'm in this room, for however, the enforceability of that, there's really nothing that you can do to enforce that. By using the language that is going to require a veterinarian, though, to do this, even that is not required by state law. It's something that we can, that we can be put in here to try to clarify on the county level. However, it's still authorized to have someone who is trained in euthanasia and is certified as a euthanasia, an individual to euthanasia. It doesn't require any type of medical licensing or anything like that. It requires a certification. So it doesn't have to be a veterinary study.
But we could make it so
we
that it does.
Yes.
I think. We do have to get these.
Mm-hmm.
It is a euthanasia technician, not licensed, just certified.
But on the center reporting to the state, right?
Yes.
The purchase.
But under Section 4, where we have...
She can't make a medical decision, so she would just have to keep track of whatever's being euthanized. It's hard to say, well, the animal was sick. That's why this is stating... Or you took out the diagnosis. You think the diagnosis should come out?
Because you're saying that the only reason then for...
I gotcha. And then we get back to the notion.
Because there's a terminal disease, whereas the reality, you're going to put a feral cat back out with two broken legs.
So I think...
Yeah.
I think two things happened in this change. One was that you took out the diagnosis, which I think is fine, but... But the way it's written now, with it just being in records, we don't have a statement that only a licensed veterinarian can euthanize an animal that is captured in a TNR operation. And I think that's what we want to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we could add an E, or either add E or put it in D, if an adoptable cat is not reclaimed by an owner in suitable home or shelter found, the cat may be returned to a site no more than 50 feet from the actual capture site. And I think we should have an E that says only a licensed veterinarian can euthanize a cat captured in a TNR operation. Would you like that language? The groups that are here and the people around the table.
However, again, I'm only going to caution in the reality of the larger picture of this, of a person can take their animal to the veterinarian's office and still have that animal euthanized by someone other than a vet, or to other shelters across the river, and it's not going to be... or even rescues that are here in this county, where you could take them to someone who is certified as a euthanasia technician and conduct euthanasia on an animal.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be the pet's own owner. So that what? I think what we would be saying is that if you are not that owner and you captured an animal, so it's captured in a TNR operation, that you no longer have that right to go to anybody. You have to go to a licensed veterinarian.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be a higher standard if you've taken an animal through one of these operations.
Is it
a higher cost?
Well, the veterinarian would have to decide that.
Yeah.
And that, these animals are working in... I think we should add... an E, if we're going to do this, that we should add an E so that the record keeping that is called for in Section 5 refers back to the action that we put in Section 4.
I have a sponsor bill about that. Is that something
that's I'd like the clarification. So basically you're carrying this over here now.
Mm-hmm. You put it on here. That only a licensed veterinarian can do this, and then under Section 5, a licensed veterinarian has a record-keeping responsibility.
Okay.
So these are now substantive things, what we're getting into. would think that would be an improvement. The revisions that were suggested, both the clarifications and the revisions from what we saw last month, I thought were very helpful and could prevent some of the abuses that have been reported to us.
Okay.
So having that modification applied to our resolution, did you put it onto the resolution?
Yeah, they got
onto the
Yeah, do you want...
As amended, you have like amended version?
Yeah.
I mean, I think,
yeah, that's right. I think I have everything, I think, so far, which is taking all the reds except the ones that I wrote more on.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
To be put onto there.
So we'll make those amendments on
there. Okay. So do we want to see if the other folks have questions, or do we want to...
Well, I think...
We know you want in, we're just trying to figure out the most helpful time, okay? So one thing that happened maybe before you come in is that has been brought up about this is that there's still some concerns of how what we would be doing with this law would fit with state law, and especially agricultural law.
Mm-hmm.
There is now a section that addresses home rule of the town,
mm-hmm.
and there was, let's see, is it still in there? Yes, Section 8.
Mm-hmm.
This local law will have no effect in the city, town, or village located in the county of Ulster that has enacted an ordinance resolution of law regulating the trapping of free-roaming feral or stray cats within its jurisdiction. So towns and villages and cities can do something different,
mm-hmm.
and then Ulster County as a county has to respect that. So I think that addresses that concern. I don't know how we're going to resolve this question about whether or not we're preempted from passing this law by state law,
right.
the ag law.
Which was answered when I spoke to Gina today. I don't know if you want to, because you spoke much more eloquently than I did, but about the ag law, where the ag law states that an animal can't be trapped and released by the owner, by a non-owner, and as I'm reading that law, that is, if I was to go to your house, grab your cat, and drop it 50 miles away.
Sure.
If I was to pick it up, take it around the block, and drop it back off because you wanted to go for a ride, we're okay. That's why we consistently kept putting in the original location of capture.
And that's where we changed the language from release to return.
Mm-hmm.
When you say release, mm-hmm. that can be misconstrued as you are releasing an animal into the wild, which is illegal. However, when you are doing return, you are returning to colony of origin or the location of it to have it shot. By the language, works towards the fact that you're actually returning the cat back to where it was. And when you start talking about other laws that talk about ownership and caretakers, that all starts to encompass the fact that that is where that cat is supposed to be.
So,
is that not returning it to the wild?
It is not, because you're returning it to its location rather than releasing to the wild.
Well, you guys are sorry. I just looked up the definition of the word wild, and I'd like to share that with you. So, it says on an animal specifically living or growing in a natural environment, not domesticated or cultivated. Would that not be the definition of wild? As related to returning these cats?
Yeah, but you guys are specifically saying to take that out of it. You're specifically saying back to the original location.
But that's semantics, though, because essentially it is still returning to the wild, and that's...
If we're returning to location, not releasing through the wild. So when you say release in what has come to be known as the ag laws and using that word release, it is where you're taking your animal and you're dumping it in the woods. Or similar actions like that. Whereas when you're dealing with trap near to return, the reason that the language has been changed over the years from TNR being released, but TNR now being returned, is that you are taking it back to the location at which you have trapped the cat.
So does it specifically release in the ag law?
So I think this answers a question actually that I had about this, which was when I read the ag law on its face, when this was presented to us last month, I said all of these TNR operations that all these groups are doing would be illegal under this law.
Right.
So what we're hearing tonight from the groups that do this is that that this has become a term of art,
right,
where if you are returning, then you're not covered by that provision in the ag law, whereas if you are going to an unspecified site or a site that's close but not that site, then it counts as this release thing that you're not supposed to do.
Right, but also the ag law gives the specific criteria as to how they are, well, as to what you do with the feral cats, and it says only for reduction, adoption, transfer to a facility or euthanasia. And it doesn't specifically say return or release, and if it doesn't, then how is that not permitted? Or how is that permitted?
To be able to return?
Yes, return. If that's not one of the, how many ones, three options that are provided under the state ag law, how would return?
That's why we're allowed to do it, right? Because the state doesn't deal with it. That's our criteria in the county. When the state doesn't act on something, we can. And we just can't step on what the state does.
Right.
That's every law we set. I think that's kind of applies here.
That's right.
Yeah, I guess the question is,
are we violating anything in there? Are anything we're going to be doing with this somehow make it not?
Right. Yeah, sure.
And I think that was one that he was reading on. You go back and goes to picking them up
and
doing the sterilization. But then opening the door and letting them out wherever. That's releasing them. You're taking it out of this environment.
So what I think we have is a legal question. And what I think might be the way to deal with this would be to go ahead to move this to public hearing, knowing that if the legal word comes in that we're not allowed to do this, that the sponsor can withdraw at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And that way we're getting things moving. If it's illegal for us to do this, then mm-hmm. we'll have to figure out a different way to address the problem.
You have to tweak something.
Well, we might have to put in a notification, then. We'd still have to notify and keep records.
Yeah, we'd have to do a rewrite from this that we would not do in committee.
Mm-hmm.
At least we would off on some.
Kathy's really going out of her way to do this for us tonight. So.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think there was so much improvement between the two laws that it shows how talking things through can be very helpful.
Has this been run by any council?
It has here. Christian Gucci.
In this form?
Yeah.
And when did he receive that?
Oh, this form? No. Basically, it's
in the packet.
Right.
Which is...
It's the same form.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
As far as I can tell.
But the thing we're trying to avoid is to have a law that goes to public hearing that has to be rewritten, and so we lose time rather than gaining time by moving ahead.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've gotten past that point if we accept the changes that we discussed here tonight. And so the law is now in the substantially the form that the public can comment on.
Well, there's going to be significant changes, but I have to go.
I wouldn't forget you.
In the beginning, when you're talking about who is applicable to, you're talking about PNR organizations, private citizens, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
There needs to be something in there that puts as any entity or person, because there are some people out there that craft with the sole purpose of euthanasia with no intent to PNR. So
mm-hmm.
everything is referencing a TNR organization or a person who's going to TNR, as opposed to that person who's just setting a trap mm-hmm. to kill.
Well, we did say TNR volunteers, organizations, or operations.
Right.
In the definition?
Prior to citizens,
thank you for coming.
Conducting cat trapping on their private property.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, what she means is just on their own private property.
Because there are entities that go onto other people's property
by invitation for the sole purpose of trapping fish.
Right. Or they're hired for that purpose.
If I may.
I'd appreciate calling on people.
Okay,
thank you about that. Yeah, sure.
Then paragraph D, if we just said private citizen or entity, organization, however we want to say that, it would still kind of cover, even if it is a group that comes out to private property and are doing this. Because I understand exactly where you're going with this.
Right. The private citizen or entity.
Person hires a organization to come in.
On their private property. Yeah.
So, what's the specific suggestion for language in 2C?
Just in D.
Yeah.
Just as private citizen and or entity or organization.
Because if you change the definition of private citizen, and that changes the issue we have.
Mm-hmm. What's the suggestion? That their private property is just private property.
Mm-hmm. That I would like better, because I didn't like there before. So in
take
D, it would read
private or public property.
Private citizen.
No quotes.
Yeah, it was still being quotes, and except the quotes would now go at the end of and or entity.
And not organization. All right.
Shall mean individual community members conducting cat trapping on private property.
On their private property?
No, it would strike there.
Thank you. Could you read one more time for me, please?
Quote, private citizen and or entity, unquote, shall mean individual community members conducting cat trapping. I think we should end there, right? Because if they're on state land, that would still be... Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Ken.
Yeah.
I wish Jody was.
I think this answers my questions.
My only thing is it's a free term release. That's all. I would like actually to bounce that off of our council too. For their legal opinion on that.
That means then we can't support any of these programs then, at all.
What's that? What?
And any TNR programs. I mean, you're talking about totally eliminating all trap, neuter, and release programs or return programs?
No. Just the actual word. The difference between the two, return and release. I guess that's kind of the point that you were making, that it's misinterpreted, or you wanted to add that because it doesn't say return specifically in the state ag law. So, that's what I would like to ask counsel to, what his definition would be of both of them, because they're both very similar, return and release. And so, yeah, that's...
I do think we may have gone through this when we went through the process, I think, for the first round of the grant.
And
that
paid
for the feral cats being in the
right.
So, yeah, there should be some clarification there.
Sure.
And
who
did you get the funding through?
Ulster County. Okay.
The county paid
for that grant.
Years ago, I was told that I had to change my window to return as opposed to release.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to change, because I've been doing it for 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to change my window.
There was one other member of the public who wanted to say something.
I am concerned about the private citizen. So I'd like something clarified. I live in the city. And can people come on your property, my property? I had an incident the other day wanting to trap for cat. I had to go to law, the police, because virtually that is occurring in our county. They are coming on private property to trap. When I say they, people, trappers.
What does law enforcement say?
Cannot.
It's under trespassing.
It's trespassing. And I was threatened by the woman. I'm going to contact whatever, but I acted on it immediately. because he wanted her cat got out. He was not neutered, and he's running all over the neighborhood right now, unfortunately. And my heart is, I would like to help her, but that was her approach. But I know of people that are trapping on property, and they are trapping private family pets. That's against the law. And I don't know if this addresses that as far as the property boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
I can trap on my own property, of course, but I wouldn't go to my neighbors and just decide to set up traps all over.
Mm-hmm.
And that's occurring. That is happening.
I think what the law enforcement advised you is what we agree with, and it's already set up that way. So we're trying to address a slightly different issue here.
No, I'm just letting you know that.
So are we
going to
make the amendments?
Yes, you want to propose the amendments on my sheet? I'll second those.
Okay,
Laura, and I seconded.
All right, discussion on amendments, I think we had all that. Thank you. So, on the amendments, all in favor? Aye. And then, is there further discussion on the resolution? Setting the public hearing? Setting the public hearing. I think we should do it. Yeah. All right. So, I second. So, on the resolution as amended?
Aye.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Warren.
You approve it?
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. If you have any questions, Laura, come in. It's mostly what was there, so you should be able to read my additions. Yes.
Deputy medical examiner does inspections during the day.
instead of just, you know, part-time medical things that we all have, you know, we've done a lot of work to have more coverage. And as part of that work, I mean, under county law, the county medical examiner is required to look at, you know, essentially unintended death to determine the cause of death. And often, within those circumstances, it requires an autopsy. You know, Ulster County is not like Dutchess County or Orange County, where they have their own ward, a very, very large medical examiner staff. What we do is we tend to contract those professional services out. About 2 years ago, we've used the same forensic pathologist out of the Albany area for many, many, many years. His caseload has become so great that he, you know, decided he wasn't going to pursue our contract anymore and notified us. So we then, we have a decision point to make. What do we want to do differently? And, you know, one of the first things we did is we looked for a shared services opportunity. And we started talking with, we did an RFP, we got a response from Dr. Kelly, the medical examiner's office. So I think it was very cost prohibitive. We have other issues too, where right now if you're at a potential homicide, for example, and there's a transport of a deceased body and remains, right now they transport to a morgue that is the hospital or a couple lines. Under a potential shared services arrangement with Dutchess County, we would then have to transport those remains to Kingston, where their morgue is located. And it would also require our police officers to then transport, go with that transport and be outside of Ulster County in a good time.
And take custody of that down.
It wasn't practical. So what we did was we put a new system in place, and that's what we came to this agreement with Westchester Medical Center. Well, the Westchester Medical Center is the parent of the Health Alliance. So as part of this contract, we do a couple of things. One, we continue to use their morgue space that they have there. We also incorporated into this agreement the use of our laboratory for forensic pathology testing. Dr. Sikorica, our former pathologist, always used Albany Medical Center and their facilities. As part of this, we now use a lab out of Philadelphia, which is really more on the cutting edge. So a lot of counties use them, so we transfer to the, again, that's included in this contract. Also, the services of a pathologist, a forensic pathologist. Well, what's nice about that is, versus us hiring our own forensic pathologist, it's very, very expensive with the number of our staff. This is a system so that when the forensic pathologist is away on vacation, they often travel, they work here, they do a lot of continuing education. Westchester Medical Center provides the backup. They also provide the services of a deaner. A deaner is essentially an assistant who assists the pathologist for the actual autopsy. Again, all those autopsies are prepared, done at the Health Alliance Hospital as they were in the past, but now we've incorporated a lot of the components that we used to do separately into this one global contract with Western Medical Center. And the idea of improving our services. Before, it would take months and months and months to have a final disposition of the cause of death. Since we've entered into this contract, we get those results in less than 60 days, which is just terrific. And actually, if you actually go to the medical examiner's website, you find that with all these additional resources that we built in, we now publicly publish all of our cases, the cause of death, heroin overdose, opioid overdose. We now publicly disclose all the information we've done for the last year and a half, continue to do it. For others, tend not to share that information. You find it, see all the autopsies, see all the causes of death, and get those accounts by month. And you can find that data from 2014 forward.
It's just not personal information, correct?
No, it's just statistical information, not information.
So that was, you said a couple years ago, it was this year that we really hit the budget. A lot of that was because that the pathologist that was no longer interested. He was cheap. I mean, he was doing a lot of work we've upped this budget a lot. It's not just because
this contract incorporates components
Yeah.
That would normally have not been in just the contract for pathologists.
And at the beginning of this year, how much more, we went up, I'm trying to remember, how much did we add to this line?
This year, not a lot.
No, it was the year before?
2 years.
And that was, you know, a lot of that had to do with him kind of retiring.
Yeah, that, and also, yeah, again, we've
expanded the scope of services.
Further, it's much larger. We also, again, so don't be misled by this very large contract. There's, if you were to compare it to, like, say, 15, 16, the individual components are contracted for separately. We're incorporating a lot of them into one contract. But as part of that, you know, major look we did at the medical examiner's office, we added, again, two additional deputy medical examiners to provide, by law, we're required to provide 24/7 coverage. That's really hard to do with, you know, basically two part-time doctors is what we have, right? So now we have an additional part-time doctor, and we have a full-time person who's on staff during the day who actually helps us with a lot of the legwork that goes into these cases. These cases today, I mean, you know, back in the day, we would, you know, a busy year for us would be 90 cases. We now plan on having 150 cases a year. I think we had 142 last year, I think it's bad. And those cases are a lot more complex, a lot more involved than they used to be. So again, we looked at it a couple of years ago. We knew that the additional expense was justified to be built into the budget. And as part of that, we restructured how we do the forensic pathology piece. You know, for this contract, and this is just, again, it's worked well, and this is to extend those services are going over.
Good. Thank you.
Okay, but don't be confusing. This incorporates 3 or 4 different components that used to be contracted for separately.
So, anything else? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Yeah. A lot of the questions don't have everything to do with this.
Resolution 133. Authorize the chairman of the legislature to the agreement with the State Department of Health for early intervention services. Move for discussion.
Second.
Discussion.
I would love to see it mandatory for all 3-year-olds.
Yeah.
And then the school district takes that over after age 3.
No, that's right. You know, from 4 to 5, we also have those. Just a few schools in the camp service program, and then school age children are dealt with after school
district. Amen. Anything else? Discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
I just want to again ask people, if they haven't already, to fill out the survey on tobacco attitudes. That was probably received an email message about it. If not, I can. Some people have done it by phone, and some people by email. So if you haven't yet,
I did it by phone.
Same thing.
Yeah,
same. It's just the same format.
Yeah,
good. Because I think it's good if our health committee members get their views, perspectives into that.
Sure. And I'm sorry, Bertie, what are we on? New business?
Anything
on? I got a phone call from I talked to Kathy about it. I got a phone call from a new gas station owner of a convenience store in Highland. He owns places in Gipsy. Can you maybe clarify this a little bit for me? So his concern is that, and I haven't confirmed yet whether it's different in Gipsy or not, but he said in our county, the employee that sells cigarettes, the Lion, isn't held accountable like he would be if he sold alcohol. It's just the owner. Is that true?
I'm not sure.
So the way our T21 law is written, it's the owner of the establishment would be fined. with alcohol, apparently, the employee who...
That's an issue, is he would like to see some kind of consequence, too. Because you or some of your friends would be there.
Mm-hmm.
You might lose your job or, but you probably get the job off the road. There's no real deterrent to you selling to your friends like there is with alcohol. It all goes on the owner. Well, he has no control. I mean, I don't, you're in trouble. But I wonder if
there's no difference
in how
you are within any kind of
affecting
in that way, the same way.
Well, you said there were certain different
unless they criminalize the possession of tobacco.
For the sales person and no
I know that we all of course
he doesn't feel fair, but he as a owner is facing consequences when his employee has no consequences.
Mm-hmm.
So what I suggested is that
they look alcohol and tobacco are two different things.
But if you're a store owner, it's not fair that you have no backup for something where you're going to be fined and your employee.
Well, I could lose my liquor license even if my employee sells liquor selling that way.
Right.
I would just tell more. It is the same word. There is consequences. The only difference is it sounds like there's no consequence to the seller where there is the seller of alcohol.
Yeah.
But I think it is, in a way, it is apples and oranges to me. If you sell liquor to an 18-year-old and go back, you kill somebody in his car. You sell tobacco to somebody in between 18 and 21 years of age.
But you have no control over it. So I'm paying a fine as a store owner, and my employee has no ramifications whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Right. So what I suggest is that we go ahead and pass the law as we've written it. Well, it could be handled internally, or it may turn out that it's not a problem, that the clerks just actually go along with it because it's what's on the calendar. But if it turns out that the owners are getting fined and it's really their employees are causing this problem for them, then I think we should go back and address it.
Yeah.
But I just don't think it's going to happen that often that the...
He called me because a police officer from Dutchess County gave him my name. I don't know who it was, but it had something to do with there being a different personality as a store in Highland.
Yeah,
I'm
not really
I don't
deal on the liquor side of the house, but on the tobacco side, I know that generally every county is enforcing the federal statute.
Which means the employee's not accountable.
It's the licensee, if the person who has the possession. But with his liquor store, he's accountable.
Right.
So he sells liquor or
But so is the employee that sells, right, to a minor?
Yeah, I think that's because it's potentially dangerous. You actually have a danger, not just a health risk, but a risk to the public by selling to underage. So I think the difference there from the state's point of view is probably just that it's a severity that they are looking at those two things differently.
I do like accountability, though.
Mm-hmm. Well,
what about the state on the 18,
that's what I think the remedy is.
Yeah, to get arrested, you have to go through court. That's with more of an impression.
Yeah. Yeah?
No, not kids.
The kids were employees.
Yeah.
If they were getting employed, it's making
But it's also, this is a state law.
18. Yeah.
Now it's a county law, 18 to 21. Do you want to, a 19-year-old that makes a mistake and sells cigarettes to, I am comfortable with it being like the owner of the establishment.
Mm-hmm.
I am. But I understand, I guess, what the guy's saying.
But being a business owner where you wouldn't necessarily have control over.
Yeah. The
issue with him having responsibility as an owner.
Well, that's what make sure he's hiring good people. You
still don't, even drive, it doesn't always.
Well, I think it's reasonable to think about, but it's just a little hard to think of exactly what the penalty would be on that person, and if we do it at the county level, saying that we, assuming that we could, then we're kind of inserting ourselves into that employee-employer relationship, and each employer may...
You already are with the alcohol.
Right, and I think it's problematic to do it, and so Joe's explanation makes sense to me, that the reason we're doing it there is because there's an immediate safety hazard from somebody consuming. There is a safety hazard with the cigarettes, too. It's just more long-term
health. Yeah, health issue, not a public safety issue.
Right. There's not a road safety issue with the cigarettes.
It's not illegal for that. Once if a 16-year-old is in possession of tobacco under the current law, they can. It's not illegal for them to publicly use
that
tobacco.
Right.
But still, if a 16-year-old, it's illegal for them to possess and in public. In any situation. I mean, there's a strong as a whole.
So on both sides, yeah, that's true. The minor is now doing something illegal.
They're both under a license.
Yep, that's true.
So I think that is what makes a difference.
Yeah. Well, to me, we are in a situation where we're trying to go and improve the situation. And we don't know how many fines might even be generated by this. Hopefully very, very few. So we could be spending a lot of time trying to craft a solution when it turns out there's not much of a problem.
Who's violating, you know, like how often that's happening in the county?
Yeah, I don't know the answer, but sure. Yeah. And we have a right now a couple of repeat offenders. I don't know that I want to put people's names up there on the record, but I think that was
probably
short. A couple of repeat offenders tend to show up and oppose whatever you
have. Yeah. The next time we're going to try to do this. I think it's a valid point from your friend. And I think if we can say that we'll monitor, and if it turns out that this is a problem for the merchants, then we'll try to craft a solution.
And if it's legal.
Yeah, if we can.
I have to look into it,
because
I'm not sure
what you're talking
about.
Yeah.
And the only, and one of the reasons that when we talk about the pulling there as a fine or whatever, we can pull their tobacco license. We're not pulling their state tobacco license. We only have the right to pull their county tobacco license.
Correct.
I wouldn't be surprised to find out we might not even be allowed to do anything to that person that's just working there. That maybe it's the idea that that person has a county tobacco license.
One of the conditions of our license is that they have a state license.
Yes. And to clarify, because we did have conversation about the withdrawing or pulling the person's license, it turns out that in Ulster County, the license renewal is yearly. So in neither the alcohol nor the tobacco do we have the provision to pull the license. It simply would not be renewed if there's a problem during that preceding year. And probably more if it was the problem in that year and preceding and preceding. So the remedy would actually be not to renew the license, rather than to pull it in case anybody asks about it. Because of that, it is comparable between the two laws in terms of that not being law.
And that might even be held when they're going back to renew their license, that it was a clerk and the clerk's been terminated or that account was addressed. Mm-hmm. So that may be one way to handle it.
The vast majority of proprietors that operate in the county do a great job.
Yes.
There's always a couple of ads and people that...
No, I think his
thing
is he owns five
places. Mm-hmm. They can't be everywhere. So that's important. Yeah.
Thank you.
Question
on adjourn? I'll make that motion. Yeah. Thank you for being here tonight.
Bye.